Well, yeah, I mean, it's like, because it's such a delicate. I mean, he's now. He was HIV positive. Now he's crossed over. Now he's what they call ARC or age-related complex. And so he what he needs is a place where he knows he's accepted and cared for. I think you should tell him what you said to me, namely that about this thing about you wanted him to have a party or you wanted him to have fun or something like that about being.
Well, it was just it came mostly from the places that I've been to, taking care of persons who were dying or whatever from their situations. That Doug basically conveyed that I was a whore to him, you know, whatever situation they were in, and wanting to, you know, alleviate whatever their situation is, have fun, not have fun, just know that they're just whatever I felt they were conveying to me to help them with. And I just basically, you know, I guess coming from that background, I'm not sure what you're.
Well, the idea you said specifically that you wanted him to have fun while he was dying, as opposed to the what you had expressed, and you said it in front of him.
I said I wanted him to have fun while he was dying.
And those words, you said that in the front porch. And I was so mad at you that had I been, as I said this morning, had it been me before I was a believer, I would have killed you without question. I mean, it's the idea, it's hopefully what all of us have left behind, the idea of doing good, but especially the idea of doing good in order to build yourself up. It is just nauseating, and I hope you heard, but I think it's imperative. I mean, you need help. You need the exhortation of everyone here in order that you don't fall into that plastic Jesus trap. And I mean, it's got to be seen. You know, I think you understand.
Just, you know, the meter of needs and set myself up as such.
Well, yeah, you said, and I read the play you wrote. I mean, the screenplay. I mean, that's what it is. It's a reflection of a plastic Jesus. I mean, you've done technically, it's a good job. But spiritually, it is one step removed, and therefore it's spiritual disaster, because it portrays a whole bunch of people trying to do good for each other and being successful at it. Many, I mean, it's setting up the kingdom of God on earth without God. There's no hope here. You understand? I mean, I think what I would ask you to do with that play is just put it away in a drawer for several months until a cross has gone deep into you, and then go ahead. And, I mean, conceptually, it's probably a good vehicle, but I want you to put it, and you do well on the screenplay. Technically, you know how to do it. But I want you to put it away if you accept my advice. I mean, you don't have to accept anything. It's worth what you're getting or what you're paying for. But to put it away in a drawer until the cross has had an opportunity to do its work. Can you hear that?
Absolutely. I was leaning more in the other way of just making sure. I knew that already with the four-page presentation. I wanted that sucker burned up. I'm worried about her dead. Where I sent that thing to.
Okay, well, it doesn't matter. I mean, it's what happens in it is there's only a second act. There's no first or third act, if that communicates. There's no, it's only well, it's not, I don't want to get into that here, but I can talk about it as much as you want to. But again, the basic problem is there's no cross. And I'm not talking about making it religious. I'm talking about seeing all those characters through the eyes of the cross. So there can be some more, so you can go deeper into the characters' minds. Anybody have anything else? You okay?
Yeah, I'm great. I've been gone for about a month, and it feels great to be back.
Okay. Let's see if we can review some of the stuff we've studied already in Genesis 13. We've already read this in terms of the reading, so let me start reviewing a few of it. And Abram went up out of Egypt. In the scriptures, it always, if you go up to the Egypt of the world, you always go up, and it's Allah. And that's where the Muslim gets the word Allah, for God. You Allah to the promised land, and you always go down, descend to Egypt, or fell into Egypt. It's an interesting. We could spend a whole long time. We're right now at the point in time in which Christianity says Abraham's the perfect Christian. In which Muslim says, in effect, that Abraham's the perfect Muslim, and where Jews say, in effect, that Abraham's the perfect Jew. They say that without really studying the life of Abraham very much. Because Abram and Abraham both screwed up at every juncture. I mean, we're going to see that right now. He's starting the real bad screw-ups. The first screw up was just a while ago, you know, Genesis 12. No, it's where there was a little bitty teeny famine.
Oh.
And rather than endure the famine, he hightailed it for the world. So it's a metaphor for what we do. The moment there's a famine in us, rather than hearing under, we lean on our own arm of understanding. We turn to the world in order to accomplish or to get what's desired, rather than this unbelievably unique thing of faith, which says, I wait on you, Father.
It's been very evident to me lately when, you know, and it's in very mundane things, just like not having enough money for something, or... You know, you think this is going to happen, so you start hedging your bets and, you know, calling people or whatever. I mean, it becomes very obvious. And so you think, okay, well, I'll do something different. I'll wait. But the waiting is so foreign to you because if you've never done it before, you're going, well, this can't be it either, you know.
Well, Abraham was to have stayed in the land, verse 7. He failed the test of Genesis 12, 7. He failed the test and the judgment was famine. And Abraham's response was to leave for Egypt rather than trust. If you can hear under or trust in a famine, then God will supply. Remember the thing in Psalms, if you're in the middle of a desert, you dig until you find water. The moment you find water in the middle of the desert, after you're digging in the desert without moving away, it'll rain on you. It's a law of the Spirit.
But it rains, it pours.
No, it's the idea that you have endured in that moment. You've not tried to change your circumstances. You've gone deep into life. If you can understand it, you have the power within you to create universes. You not only have the power within you to create him, you have the power to destroy him. All that's happening is, I mean, I know this sounds freaky, but I promise you that we as a body will see the day when we can say, literally, to that mountain, be cast into the sea, and it'll be cast into the sea. when there is no more cholesterol in this tube, this thing, this contact point between us and God, when it's clear, when it's empty, when it's blessed are the empty in spirit, and whatsoever you say shall be done for you. If you're in the middle of a desert, then the test will become real. Then to know that you have the power to cause the moon to leave its orbit and do nothing, that's the test. Then you're continuing with him and his temptation. If you're just being tested by the same thing the world is, well, you have to get by that. You have to jump over the world. The only way you jump over the world's test is to hear under wherever you are. In other words, if there's something, whatever it is that's bothering you tonight, you can never, you'll just respond to it as the world will for the rest of your life, as long as you continue to try to solve the problem, as long as you continue to lean on your own arm of understanding. But the moment you say, you refuse even the very talents, the very powers that you have resident within you, when you refuse to meet anything and you give your life totally up to the Father, then you are continuing with him in his temptation. Though he had all power, and though he was in the form of God, he thought it not something to be grasped at any given moment to be equal with God. But he emptied himself and made himself of no reputation. That's testing. That's where you learn obedience. You learn obedience by the things that you suffer. Well, I mean, I promise you that I'm a reasonably good fundraiser. I mean, we could have had, over the years, millions of dollars. I'm not going to say, praise God, I never even thought about going out and raising money. And we thought about it. We tried it a couple times. But it was. I always felt sick to my stomach when we did it. Whatever it is that you have the power to affect yourself, that's what you empty. That's a big deal, folks. That's the biggest deal you'll ever hear. That's the ticket to faith, is to empty yourself of your strengths. Ever since Abraham went down to Egypt in the midst of the famine, Jews have gone down to Egypt for help. Jews and the Christians, first thing they do is they go down and try to ask at Pharaoh's hand without asking of God. For this, the prophets have always rebuked them. And for this, they've always killed the prophets.
Shoot.
I mean, look at
it. I mean, that's what we do, though.
Sure.
I'm just doing this. No.
So that's what all those guys, the moral majority and all those people, you know, always want to court the president.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, they're the same people that would kill us in a heartbeat.
Well, and Abram, back to 13, chapter 13, verse 1. And Abram went up out of Egypt. Now, what were the things? The thing that, yeah, he went up. It doesn't sound like, sounds like it's a great deal. You know, he's being very spiritual, and he was leaving Egypt to go to return to the promised land. Hallelujah. He got kicked out of Egypt because his Pharaoh caught him in his.
They escorted him to the border.
Deception, and they escorted him to the border.
Your sister.
After the angel guy had been beating the shit out of Pharaoh all night, for even thinking about trying to get next to Sarah.
Yeah.
And so Abram, in his real righteousness, he's, praise God.
Did I call her my sister? No, that was a spiritual term.
I just tried to slide on out.
But even this was the first time that the Jews robbed Egypt. That was because even, I mean, Pharaoh just poured the riches on him, and not only poured the riches on him, he gave Abram his daughter, Pharaoh's daughter, Hagar, in order to cement an alliance, he thought, between this guy who he's, they don't have a lot of communication. They didn't really understand, but he kind of suspected this guy had some power, but he didn't quite know what it was. He just knew that all night, every time he tried to touch Sarah, he got beat up about the head and shoulders by this something he couldn't see. And so he decided he's going to give some goodies. He's going to get a cement a relationship. And that's what the world... Now, keep that in mind. Now, never mind. Luke 9 is about this making friends. Make friends to yourself of the mammon of unrighteousness so that when it fails, they will accept you. Did I say Luke 16?
I really did.
He said 9.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Luke 16. Read through verse 13.
1 through 13? And he said also unto his disciples, there was a certain rich man which had a steward. The same was accused unto him that he had wasted his goods. And he called him and said unto him, how is it that I hear this of thee? Give an account of thy stewardship, for thou mayest be no longer steward. Then the steward said within himself, what shall I do? For my Lord taketh away from me the stewardship. I cannot dig. To beg I am ashamed. I am resolved what to do, that...
I'm ashamed of this.
I relate to this. This is great. I am resolved what to do, that when I am put out of my stewardship, they may receive me into their houses.
Let me go look in the $115,000 a month pile.
Oh, I'll suck up to everybody. Then somebody will have to be
nice. The people he's stewarding for.
Sure.
Oh.
Oh, Jackie, you've got to follow this.
No, that's why. Okay.
Okay, so he called every one of his lord's debtors unto him and said unto the first, how much owest thou unto my lord? And he said, 100 measures of oil. And he said to him, take thy bill, sit down quickly and write 50. Then he said to another, and how much owest thou? And he said, 100 measures of wheat. And he said unto him, take thy bill and write 80.
No, 80 is 80, obviously. 80. But remember now, Jesus, this is the God of the universe talking to a group. The Pharisees were people of the word. They were the legalists of the legalists. Everything had to be reasonable. Had to be fair. And here comes this guy telling them,
the cheat.
Save your ass.
Yeah, save your butt.
Okay, go ahead. This one gives the Dallas Theological Seminary and the Southwest Theological Seminary. This parable, this gives them fits.
And the Lord commended the unjust steward, because he had done wisely. For the children of this world and their generation are wiser than the children of light. And I say unto you, make to yourselves friends of the mammon of unrighteousness, that when ye fall, they may receive you into everlasting habitations.
Huh?
He that is faithful in that which is least is faithful also in much. And he that is unjust in the least is unjust also in much. If therefore you have not been faithful in the unrighteous mammon, who will commit to your trust the true riches? And if you have not been faithful in that which is another man's, who shall give you that which is your own? No servant can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will hold to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon.
Why did his master say he was doing a good thing? Because he got half the debt? Did he know that he only got half the debt? Or that
the master knew? The master saw exactly what this sucker did.
Okay, so the fact that he got the debt paid off even partially at all was
You're smart.
What's a mammon?
A mammon is a Chaldean word that means anything that you have confidence in.
Power, the money, the deal. No, he said, "You're a smart guy. patted him on the back.
And he said that, and he said, the children of this generation are wiser than the children of light.
Make friends of the man.
Who are the this children of light then?
Us.
Who's the one? Well, what's this generation?
The world. The guy who's currently alive.
Well, you haven't even asked the question, the obvious questions. I mean, what the hell does it mean to make to yourself friends of the mammon of unrighteousness?
Well, that's further ahead. That, we're getting there.
That, when it fails, they will receive you into their habitation. I mean, this is a weird, weird, weird.
It sure is. I remember feeling this way last time we talked about this, too.
So we'll receive people.
No, it's talking about you. Look at
saying you make friends. Hey, like practical. Ourselves.
You're going to see the same people on the way down that you saw on the way up.
No,
that's not it.
That's true.
Oh, she got it.
And I say to you, make to yourselves friends of the mammon of unrighteousness, that when you fail, or when it fail, they may receive you into everlasting habitations.
What habitations? Use the world, but don't abuse it.
That's right.
Oh,
correct.
But it also has the idea that...
Oh, you'll make friends with the mammon, you make friends with the people who handle the mammon.
Yeah. And it also means that it's the idea is that it's never up to us to say who's doing the work of God.
Ooh.
You understand? That which we consider the most heretical thing in the universe may be the place of righteousness from God's standpoint. You understand that? Oh, yeah. Make to yourself friends of the mammon of unrighteousness.
Because you don't judge if they're doing God's work or not.
Ah.
I mean, it's the idea that, well, let's take...
We should invite Jerry Falwell.
I mean, what Ed says. What Ed said?
What? What'd he say?
What'd you say? About make friends with...
Because you can't judge if they're doing God's work or not.
Yeah, that's right.
You just
live. It's not up to us. I mean, again, that's why... This doctrine into which we've been delivered is really weird because it says we don't have the right to say if someone else is following it or not.
You know, it's really wrong because a man came in today, he has AIDS and he's dying. I mean, he's real bad and nobody wants to cut his hair. Everybody avoids him. And somebody put him on that girl, Nikki, and I thought of that today. I looked over there at him and I thought, you know, there's Jesus sitting there. And, nobody wants to touch him I just nearly started crying because, I mean, he's not gay or he's not, you know, but it doesn't matter.
It'll break your heart. Oh.
I mean, I really did start crying.
Well, let's go on. He that is faithful... And that which is least is faithful also in much. And he that is unjust in the least is unjust also in the much. If therefore you have not been faithful in the unrighteous mammon, the senses, the things that you have confidence in with regard to the sensory perception, who will commit to your trust the true riches? And if you have not been faithful in that which is another man's, who shall give you that which is your own? Now, there's a whole lot of lessons in this, obviously.
Yeah, it's like each scripture is like addressing them. See, you didn't say it was a good thing. You didn't say it was a good thing.
What?
I mean, it wasn't a bad thing.
No. What's the lesson? The lesson, the fundamental lesson of this parable is that truly the riches of the world have no meaning. I mean, it's not fairness, it has nothing to do with anything that we can, you know, discern at any given moment. He doesn't know yet, or maybe he does, but he didn't before, whether or not he should claim bankruptcy or not because of this crazy thing. Well, the bankruptcy laws are part of the law, be under the law. Of course he should if that's what's there. I mean, don't. What most people's concern over living in a value basis is their own name, right? Either trying to protect their good name. Well, first of all, they're protecting the wrong name. But the idea then is that to use the world but not abuse it. To use, the word use there means to use as a hammer or as a stick, right? I'm gonna affect a purpose with this stick because I can't, my arm wasn't long enough. So I can affect several purposes, huh?
You go ahead and affect it some more. Replay.
See, so therefore I'm using the work, I'm using this, i.e. the world, in order to be Rick.
Use the world.
I don't know how long you be before you
use the world, but don't abuse Rick too much.
Right. So what it means though is, but don't abuse it. The word abuse there means to give breath to. So don't pay any attention to the stupid stick. Use the laws. Use money. Use whatever it is, but never give it any importance.
Well, like when it says, if you're not faithful in the unrighteous commandment and the stupid stuff, who will commit to your trust and true riches? I mean, who's he commenting about there?
He's saying he's not handing it over to the stupid dose. He's handing it over to the wise people, always wise.
Well, like wise as serpents, you mean?
Yeah.
Wise period. Wise as wise.
What is wisdom?
Knowledge.
No. Timing.
That's right. Wisdom.
It is.
You're really good. The fundamental aspect of wisdom is timing.
I did not know that.
Faith is knowledge. That was bad. That was not good.
Not wisdom. Wisdom. Wisdom.
Not
wisdom.
What is
wisdom?
Not this. I hit you. I said bad.
Laughing is not a sign of wisdom.
We're talking about
Isaac. Do you understand? I wanted you to see how that Abram ended up robbing Egypt here. He got all kinds of goodies. Jewels and camels and
She asses.
Where's
those hats?
I have a question about this chapter 16. What did he talk about when the 100 measures of oil and then he says sit down at like 50?
Because he's going to get the bribe.
These guys owed.
They owed the other guy.
Oh, I see.
It'd be like.
Wait to say, oh, but I owe you.
It's like some guy from American Express came to you and said, "Yo, 400, make 200.
Make 200. You pay it right now. I'll let
right
your, I'll let off your debt. You'd be crazy not to say, okay.
So good.
There you go.
I think maybe what's confused him is that later he says that's trustworthy.
Yeah, because. The only thing to be trustworthy
if he cut the bill deal in half and took a bribe.
Because the trustworthiness has to do from a different angle than we've been taught that trustworthy is. The only act of trustworthiness from God's standpoint is the act of holding faith precious. Well, it's even worse. It's holding the trial of faith as precious. That's what, from God's standpoint, from if we are looking from the top down, that's the only thing that God sees as precious. The only thing that God sees as trustworthy. If you have the wisdom to see that the suffering is what's precious. It's the trial of faith.
I'm trying to, how does Abraham fall into this?
Well, Abraham, we were using him because he messed up, just like we all do. He messed up terribly, but he twisted it. He turned it so that it became great wisdom. And he left and went back home with all kinds of goodies that are now going to get him in trouble in a minute here. It's he doesn't learn it and then get it right. That's the lesson of Abraham. He never quite gets it right for 100 years. Okay? Now let's go back to 13. Yeah, when he goes down into Egypt, It's always the Hebrew word yared. It means to descend, go down, to bring down, to fall. The world's purpose forever and always will be to besiege Israel, or to besiege, just like Egypt's purpose was to besiege Israel, the world's purpose is to besiege the seed of Christ within you, to never let it have an expression, to always cause you to do well unto yourself, to always cause you to look towards self-realization, to always force you to lean on your own arm of understanding. But Egypt is only and still only providing, then and as is now, it's only providing the antagonism, which is transforming the innocence of the seed into holiness. That's what we see. That's what wisdom sees. It never has an agenda. Okay, let's go back to 13. And Abram went up out of Egypt, he and his wife and all that he had, and Lot with him into the south. And Abram was very rich in cattle and silver and in gold. And he went on his journeys from the south even to Bethel, unto the place where his tent had been at the beginning, between Bethel and Ai. That's another story. Unto the place of the altar which he had made there at the first. And there Abram called on the name of the Lord. Now, in all the study of the scriptures, you will never once find either prayer or an altar mentioned in Egypt. Prayer is impossible in the world. An altar is impossible in the world. An altar is a place of sacrifice, a place of death. If you become, if you present yourself the sacrifice, then you automatically are transformed out of the world. Now, and Abram called the name of the Lord. And Lot also, which went with Abram, had flocks and herds and tents, and the land was not able to bear them, that they might dwell together, for their substance was great, so that they could not dwell together. And there was a strife between the herdmen of Abram's cattle and the herdmen of Lot's cattle. And the Canaanite and the Perizzite dwelled then in the land. Now, and Abram said unto Lot, let there be no strife, I pray thee, between thee and me, and between my herdmen and thy herdmen, for we be brethren. And if it is not the whole land before thee, separate thyself, I pray thee, from me. If thou wilt take the left hand, then I will go to the right. Or if thou depart to the right hand, then I will go to the left. Wish we had more time.
Does that mean anything?
Yeah.
I mean, like trading, like bartering him, trade places or whatever like that?
No, it's worse than that. The separate is the word parad in the Hebrew, and it means a total separation. It means to disperse a people, to drive a wedge, to divide a river. This is real separation. And the substance was the cause of Lot's and Abraham's separation. All the stuff they had would not fit into the kingdom, into the place that they were established. Their stuff would not fit in the place.
That's what all this was about?
Yeah.
So, I mean, is this...
This is the opposite of Ruth. What?
This is almost like another mistake.
It's a huge mistake.
It's like, I want to keep my stuff, and you want to keep your stuff, so I guess we're just going to have to nuts each other again.
Yeah, I mean, this is
a large... Instead of getting rid of the stuff, he got rid of his...
This is a picture of carnal Christianity, what we're about to see here. All the stuff they had would not fit in the kingdom. This, the opposite of this is true in Ruth. If aught but death part thee and me. Here, all that parted him was riches. Abram didn't want strife or conflict, so to avoid it, he said, let's separate rather than resolve it. Now,
that sounds familiar.
Let's separate. There's never a reason to separate. Because separation is the lie that the deception or the curse is based on, the fall is based on. And this is it's the basis upon which the wicked one has deceived the whole world to cause you to think that you are separate from God, i.e., you can run around all your life and say, well, I'm not separate from God, I know God's with me. But the test of whether you believe that you're separate from God is whether or not you separate yourself from the brethren. If you say you love God and hate or separate yourself from the brethren, then you're a liar. Now, stop a minute and think. Think of the people in your life since the consciousness of yourself that you've separated yourself from. The numbers are astounding.
Separate yourself as to divorce. What is it you say sometimes about to divorce yourself from someone?
It's to murder. Yeah, when you separate, it's as though they were. Now, even for this screw up, Lot's the one that's going to get in trouble.
You said and Lot lifted up his eyes. Is that him?
Oh, yeah, big time.
You think what looks good?
Whatever your eyes have seen spiritually, that's what you've done. You've done this all. You've lifted up your eyes and said, behold. Now, you got to remember that this area, it said of this area right here, and this is what he chose. Lot chose what is now the Dead Sea. Before that was dammed up by the explosions that took place at the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah, that was a verdant, green, beautiful, perfect weather valley. And it went the River Jordan went all the way down to the Gulf here, the Gulf of Aqaba. And that's why like Petra, when you mm-hmm. It's that incredible city that's carved out of the solid granite, solid rock.
The Indiana Jones.
What?
The last Indiana Jones movie was filmed there. We haven't seen that. Temple of Doom.
The Last Crusade. Okay. What happened is Lot chose that which was attractive. He chose the pride that which was attractive after the seeing of the eyes. He selected the fertile pastures of the Jordan Valley. It is now, it's totally, I mean, you can't, have any of you ever been there?
What were you going to say about Petra?
Huh?
What were you going to say about Petra?
Well, I mean, this city that was built out of solid rock and it built into the rock, it's just an incredible thing. They would never have built it in the middle of the desert.
The climate had changed, it's changed.
Yeah, what happened is that Petra was built in this wide, verdant valley here, which was incredibly beautiful. But as soon as this water was dammed, this became, it's some of the worst desert in the world. And there, you come around this corner and there's this incredible multi-story thing. You can't even believe it's there. Okay. This is a picture. The Dead Sea is the picture of carnal Christianity. They select that which is good looking and beautiful. They try to make it clean. They choose that which is great. But inside it are Sodom and Gomorrah. And rather than repent, rather than letting the angel or the messenger in, they want to go out to the messengers and do all kinds of weird stuff. And God destroys it, causes there to be not a, there can be no prophecy. There's only a damming up. And so they're still trying to make it pretty. But spiritually, it's death and dead and ugly and terrible and first there's the well-watered Christ, then separation, then the damming up. The Dead Sea is the lowest point on the face of the earth. It smells extremely bad, it looks extremely bad. Every time you want to see carnal Christianity, anytime you want to see somebody that's successful after the flesh, we ought to have a field trip to the Dead Sea.
Yeah.
Now, verse 10. Lot lifted up his eyes and beheld all the plain of Jordan, and it was well watered everywhere before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, even as the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt, even as thou comest to Zoar. And Lot shows him all the plain of Jordan, and Lot journeyed east. They separated themselves, the one from the other. What happens to journey east? What does it mean to journey eastward? Eastward. You go back towards...
South.
You go back to where you came from. What did Lot do? He separated from Abram, even no doubt after he had heard the promise. His riches caused the separation. He judged after the seeing of his eyes. And he turned his back in the Holy of Holies, which is always westward, and returned to where they had come from, which was eastward. Well, that's why he'll end up being destroyed.
So was there bad blood between the Methodists and the Methodists? This wasn't very amicable, was it? Lots of gurs.
And Abram dwelt in the land of Canaan, and Lot dwelt in the cities of the plain, and pitched his tent toward Sodom. But the men of Sodom were wicked and sinners before the Lord exceedingly. And the Lord said unto Abram, after that Lot was separated from him, lift up now thine eyes, and look from the place where thou art northward and southward, and eastward and westward. For all the land which thou seest, to thee will I give it, and to thy seed forever. And I'll make thy seed as the dust of the earth, so that if a man can number the dust of the earth, then shall thy seed also be numbered. Arise, walk through the land, in the length of it and in the breadth of it, I will give it unto thee. And Abram removed his tent, and came and dwelt in the plain of Mamre, which is Hebron, which is in Hebron, and built there an altar unto the Lord. Now, there's a lot, if any man can number the dust of the earth, then they can number the seed of Israel. Now, how can that be? Israel has never had that many people, and if you combined them all from the history of the world unto now, there wouldn't be that many. It says in other places they're in number as the stars of the heaven. Do you know how many stars there are? There's over 100 billion stars that have that have solar systems that have the capacity for life. But there are there's billions of billions of stars.
McDonald's
exactly
hamburger.
The context
billions
you
used
too.
Huh?
Yeah. Carl Sagan says that exactly. Doesn't he also say that there's many stars that there are the sand on the earth?
I never heard of that, but I would guess that's probably true.
All the beaches of the world, you added up all those little pieces of sand.
But that's how many people that the scriptures say are Israel. house can that be?
There's aliens out there.
No.
People living on all those billions of stuff.
Alien believers.
You already know the answer to this.
You already know the answer. Because the seed of God after Pentecost has been shed on all flesh. And it's said, it's also then, by definition, shed on the seed's seed. So every time every man has masturbated, that has the potential for the number of, for Israel. And that's why it says, though Israel be as the stars of the sky or the sand of the sea, only a very small remnant shall be saved.
So that the Holy Spirit fertilizes the seed.
That's right.
Not when
they were this. In verse 18, it says, "Then Abram moved his tent and came and dwelt in the plain of Mamre, which is Hebron, and built there an altar unto the Lord." Hebron, it's one of the most ancient cities in the world. I think it's second only to Damascus. It's in a beautiful valley with spring-fed pools. Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob all lived there for many years. They are all buried there, along with Sarah and their wives. And a mosque is now built over the tombs of the patriarchs.
What is a mosque?
It's an Islamic
church.
Is it just like a guess at where they're buried, or is it?
No, it's pretty for sure. But only certain devout Muslims can go into this area. But they've got it roped off, and there's a. They write their prayer requests, and they throw them down the well, or down this cave. It's the cave of Malpec, which is up here. And it's become like this. It's the Jewish equivalent of the Lourdes, or the place where you go to get healed for stuff and magic stuff. But it's funny. It was one of the. Hebron was also one of the cities of refuge, which we'll get into later.
Where's Hebron now? What country is it?
Israel.
But there's a mosque on there?
Yeah. It's the West Bank.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah. And it's also the present town there. This is kind of interesting because the town that's there now is called Khalil. K-H-A-L-I-L. And it means in Arabic, the friend of God. And the interesting thing to me about Kala is when I was secreted out of Lebanon on a phony passport and all kinds of goodies by the American Embassy. And I had the passport I had was some other first name I can't remember, but Khalil was my last name on the phony passport.
Wow. Did you know that at the time?
I didn't know what it meant at the time. No.
It didn't seem conspicuous that you didn't speak any of those languages.
No, I just had to get. They did all kinds of special things. I mean, it looked like one of those deals with 15 armored cars, and they rushed me to the airport, and then went through all the security.
They just had to show up.
I just had to show up, and they showed the passport. Huh?
What were you doing? Oh, that's a long story.
Retake
Smoothly.
Huh?
Yeah, there's an article about it.
Retake what? Texas Monthly.
No.
Let's go to Isaiah. If I seem a little discombobulated, is because I'm in a lot of pain tonight. I'm sorry. Isaiah 42. Readings are from verse 2 to verse 14, but again, we have to do the rule of 21, so let's go ahead and read the whole chapter. Well,
Now let's start backwards. Let's do that. Let's start in verse 21 and verse 41. And then, verse 21 and verse of chapter 41 and go through the end of the chapter. So it's a little longer. You want to start?
Produce your cause, saith the Lord. Bring forth your strong reasons, saith the King of Jacob. Let them bring them forth and show us what shall happen. Let them show the former things, what they be, that we may consider them, and know the latter end of them. Declare us things for to come. Show the things that are to come hereafter, that we may know that you are gods. Yea, do good or do evil, that we may be dismayed and behold it together.
Now, do you understand the import of that? It doesn't matter. He's contrasting Egypt or the world with life. And he's saying what you did in the world matters absolutely nothing. Behold, produce your strong cause. Come forth. Contend with me. Do good or do evil. It doesn't matter. Do it with everything in you, but behold it together, that we may behold it together and be dismayed. You understand? You have got to begin to view life from the top down. To not view life from your own petty viewpoints of what is important or not important. By the way, if this article, this spent 4.5 days here. He claims it's supremely positive. I don't know what that means, but what I'm getting at is there will be people in your world that are going to read this story that maybe for the first time will get a better idea of what we're about.
Right.
The idea then of do good or do evil, that we may behold it together, that was the whole thrust of it. The whole thrust of what I said to him was, it doesn't matter whether it's good or evil according to man's standards. That's the emphasis. It should be interesting.
Behold, you are of nothing, and your work of naught. An abomination is he that chooseth you. I have raised up one from the north, and he shall come from the rising of the sun, shall he call upon my name, and he shall come upon princes as upon mortar, as a potter treadeth clay. Who hath declared from the beginning that we may know, and before time that we may say, he is righteous? Yea, there is none that sheweth. Yea, there is none that declareth. Yea, there is none that heareth your words. The first shall say to Zion, behold, behold them, and I will give to Jerusalem one that bringeth good tidings. For I beheld, and there was none, there was no man, even among them, and there was no counselor that, when I asked of them, could answer a word.
Okay.
Behold, they are all vanity, their works are nothing. The molten images are wind and confusion.
Now, for those of you who haven't been around a long time, molten images are the things that you respond to emotionally, out of your control. They're images of the way you think things should or shouldn't be, that are forged in the fires of your emotions. And so they're the things that they're just as bad as the other. They're worse. But the other gods and idols and engraven images that you worship in here are fairly rational. But you each have molten images that were formed in the fire of your own experience that are the real ones that really drive you. And that's what he's talking about here.
Behold my servant, whom I behold, mine elect, in whom my soul delighteth. I have put my spirit upon him. He shall bring forth judgment to the Gentiles. He shall not cry nor lift up, nor cause his voice to be heard in the street. A bruised reed shall he not break, and a smoking flax shall he not quench. He shall bring forth judgment of the truth. He shall not fail nor be discouraged till he hath set judgment in the earth, and the isles shall wait for his law.
Now, all of Judaism recognizes these scriptures as pertaining to Messiah. The issue is they don't believe that he has come yet. Christians believe that Messiah came, is not here now, and is going to come again. So, you know, I had this talk with Rabbi Offshire on this television show. We were quoting this New York rabbi who, in some ecumenical kind of movement, was trying to get Jews and Christians together for this one purpose. He says, well, this isn't such a big deal. When Messiah comes, we'll just ask him if he's been here before. But you see, I mean, it's the same. That's why modern Christianity and synagogue Judaism are exactly the same. They're both waiting for Messiah to come. But according to this book, according to this law, according to this system of thought, synagogue Judaism is an abomination. It's impossible.
Oh, you mean when you have a whole bunch of people in a building just like Christianity?
No, synagogue Judaism is Judaism without a temple. There were no... where the sacrifices can't be. Do you understand? The first year, by their own words, by their own law, the first year that they could not make the sacrifice in the Holy of Holies on the day of Yom Kippur, from their own words, in their own mouth, Israel ended. The world ended according to their own. It actually did, but not according to the census. I mean, do you see the ludicrousness of a rabbi, the chief rabbi, and the Christianity saying when Messiah comes again, we'll ask him if he's been here before? But that shows the paucity of modern Christianity. In verse 4, he shall not fail nor be discouraged till he have set judgment in the earth, and the isles shall wait for his law. This is obviously talking about Messiah. Okay, two more.
Thus saith God the Lord, he that created the heaven and stretched them out, he that spread forth the earth and that which cometh out of the pit, he that giveth breath unto the people upon it and spirit to them that walk therein. I, the Lord, have called thee in righteousness and will hold thine hand and will keep thee and give thee for a covenant of the people, for a light of the Gentiles.
Go ahead and read the next one too.
To open the blind eyes, to bring out the prisoners from the prison and them that sit in the darkness out of the prison house.
Okay. Now, those two verses are the revelation of Christ, but they're also true, and God is calling the same thing in you. I, the Lord, have called you in righteousness and will hold your hand and will keep you and give you for a covenant of the people, for a light of the Gentiles, to open the blind eyes, to bring out the prisoners from prison, and them that sit in darkness out of the prison house. That's still your heritage. That's Christ. As he is in this world, so are we. You can't think anymore like you used to think. You can't fear what they fear. You can't give importance to what they give importance to. This is your calling. But he didn't know it right away the first time he read it. It's the same thing. He read this every 3 years. And he had the slow dawning awareness of who he was. The same exact thing that's happening in you. As he was or is in this world, so are we.
I thought this meant we were supposed to start a prison ministry.
No, that's not prison. That's prison, the bars of your own mind. I mean, that's a whole lot of people.
See if you're joking or not.
No, there's a guy that says that.
Oh, of course there is. There's Chaplain Ray Huckstra.
That person says that we're supposed to have prison ministries because of that.
Well, a lot of guys say it.
I am the Lord, that is my name, and my glory will I not give to another, neither my praise to graven images. Behold, the former things are come to pass, new things do I declare. Before they spring forth, I tell you of them.
Okay, now, it's you understand that we... The graven images are the graven images that are the ideas and the opinions and the value systems that you have in your mind. They're graven with a pen, just as surely as they were graven on an idol. I mean, do you, all of you really understand that? I mean, do you understand the depth of that idolatry? I'm not sure whether I should have done it that way, or I didn't know what to do, or how do I do it right. It's all the fruit of worship of that graven image in here. Most of them you didn't even write. You understand that? You're so stupid that you still worship the graven images that someone else wrote in there. In fact, I'll go so far as to say not one of you have ever had an original thought. You've just rearranged other people's thinking.
Right.
But the value systems are taken. You might as well have all of your teachers and scholars and parents and all those and that you have given importance to and have them up in their writing. They're writing away. He will not, and can you imagine how sick God gets when a group of people come along and corporately, by a conspiratorial alliance, agree to put God's name on those graven images? That's what a denomination is.
Singing the Lord a new song, and his praise from the end of the earth. Yea, we go down to the sea, and all that is therein, the isles and the inhabitants thereof. Let the wilderness and the cities thereof lift up their voice. The villages that Kedar doth inhabit. Let the inhabitants of the rocks sing. Let them shout from the top of the mountains. Let them give glory unto the Lord, and declare his praise in the islands. The Lord shall go forth as a mighty man. He shall stir up jealousy like a man of war. He shall cry, yea, roar. He shall prevail against his enemies. I have long time holding my peace. I have been still and refrained myself. But now will I cry like a prevailing woman. I will destroy and devour at once.
Amen.
Whoa. I will make waste mountains and hills and dry up all the earth. And I will make the rivers islands and I will dry up the pools. And I will bring the vine by the way that they knew not. I will lead them in paths that they have not known. I will make darkness light before them and crooked things straight. These things will I do unto them and not forsake them. They shall be turned back. They shall be greatly ashamed and trust in graven images that say to the molten images, "Ye are our gods." Hear ye dead.
You understand? We don't say to this thing, "You are my God." But we say to it, "You are my God," because that's what we worship. If your feelings are hurt, if you have hurt feelings, that's what you'll worship. If you understand, if something makes you feel good emotionally, that's what you'll worship. I mean, in effect, you're saying, "You are my God. You are what I give importance to." Okay.
Hear ye dead, and look ye blind, that ye may see. Who is blind but my servant? Dead as my messenger that I sent. Who is blind as he that is perfect, and blind as the Lord's servant? Seeing many things, but thou observest not, opening the ears, but he heareth not. The Lord is well pleased for his righteousness' sake. He will magnify the law and make it honorable. But this is a people robbed and spoiled. They are all of them snared in hose, and they are hid in prison houses. They are for a prey, and not deliver, for a spoil, and none said, restore.
Who among you will give ear to this? Who will hearken and hear for the time to come? Who gave Jacob for a spoil, and Israel to the robbers? Did not the Lord, he against whom we have sinned? For they would not walk in his ways, neither were they obedient unto his law. Therefore he hath poured upon him the fury of his anger, and the strength of battle, and he hath set him on fire round about. Yet he knew not, and
it burned him, yet he laid it not to heart. Amen. We can take it, big guy, for the tape's purpose.